All right. You starting us
first? Welcome to Practical Rambling Fathers. This is Father Brian.
This is Father Tay.
And we have our theme song again.
I swear.
Yeah, that's what we got. So we'll get Middle C in here someday.
Yep. I'm working on it.
Today, exciting announcements. We get Mother Faith and Sister Strength of Martyrs as hosts. Or not hosts. We're hosting them. They're guests. So talk a little bit about religious life and kind of end off our last two podcasts here on our women's retreat a year after we finished the fourth one. So whatever. We're working on it. Mm-hmm. So Father Tay, do you have anything?
Just thank you guys for your patience. And so we ask that, you know, this, as we're finishing up the women's series, you know, go back if you've forgotten some talks and then just kind of entrust yourself to our Blessed Mother Mary as you dive deeper into your own relationship with Christ and allow her to guide you. And so we thank you for listening to us. And so we'll kind of start the interview process. So who'd like to start first?
Just tell us about yourself. Tell do any yourself. Intro you want.
Yes.
It's an open book.
Okay. You first.
Okay. I'm Sister Mary, Strength of Martyrs. I'm originally from New York. I've been blessed to be in Mankato for about 4.5 years now. I entered religious life in 2013. We do our formation in the Washington, D.C. area. And then after my formal formation, I came here to Mankato, so this has been my one and only mission thus far, which has been a blessing, working at our parish of Saints Peter and Paul here. I have one younger brother who's 2.5 years younger than me, and by God's grace, he is a priest for the Archdiocese of New York. It's definitely a blessing that God has given to our family. He was just ordained. I did my final vows in 2020, and then he was ordained a deacon 2 months later, and then at the end of the year, a priest. So
nice.
My mom jokes, we can't have a better Christmas card than that year's Christmas card. That was kind of like the
pinnacle.
I was home this year, and she's like, I guess we're just going to have the river as the background. That's all we're going to get. You know, you guys aren't. No.
You're already special.
Yeah, all the special things have happened. That's okay.
That's awesome.
So small family.
Nice.
My name's Sister Mary, Mother of Faith, Mother Faith for short, and I entered with the Servants of the Lord in 2003 after my sophomore year in college. I was a missionary in Italy for 8 years after my time of formation. Then I spent some time as our Mistress of Postulance in Washington, D.C., and came to Mankato with Sister Strength of Martyrs. 4.5 years ago.
Yep.
Woo!
Same time.
Yep.
Okay,
same time.
I was wondering. Okay.
Yep. Wonderful. We can't wait. 2023.
Formator and then mother. Okay, that's great. I've had the same thing in priesthood, so I've had my rector be my pastor, so that was fun.
The formation continues.
Yeah,
the formation continues. Yep.
It's all
every day.
Sister
Strength is now my formator.
That's right.
That would be that.
Good. So how long is that process of formation for your guys' order?
Well, I'm sure.
I did it for a while.
Yeah, so the ultimate process can be anywhere from 7 to 9 years, depending on the candidate. So really, in our order, we try not to have fixed dates. I know there are other orders that have like a fixed date of entrance and then a fixed date of passing for novitiate.
Yep.
When a young woman enters our religious family at any point during the year, they become what's known as a postulant, from the Latin word postulare, or to ask entrance. And so it's a period of just like living with the religious and getting to know the rhythm of our daily life. And then at some point during that time, which could be anywhere from a month to a year, depending on the candidate, they request to enter the novitiate. And the novitiate is a time of silence, a time of growing in the charism of the order, and a time of testing one's vocation and mm-hmm. listening to the Lord in a deeper way. Mm-hmm. So that period could be anywhere from 1 to 2 years, also depending on the candidate. And okay. and really, it's a constant process of discernment and dialogue with the superior at that time. Then after the time of novitiate, during that time of novitiate, our candidates receive their Marian name. So all of our sisters, because we take a fourth vow of Marian slavery, according to St. Louis de Montfort, mm-hmm. all of our sisters take a name of the Blessed Mother. So mm-hmm. my name, Sister Mary, Mother of Faith, Sister Mary, Strength of Martyrs. During the novitiate, we receive our Marian name and then also the religious habit, which is beautiful. Then we have a period of temporal profession, which for us is actually 6 years total.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's 3 years of temporal profession and mm-hmm. then a three-year period of vows preparing you for final profession.
Mm-hmm.
And half of that is done in a house of formation where mm-hmm. we do all of our philosophical and theological studies. We have our intellectual program kind of mimics the intellectual program of the priesthood in a lot of common areas.
Sure.
And then our last 3 years in preparation for final vows are spent in the mission.
Mm.
So it's kind of another period of testing and living in a more intimate community life. So Sister Strength and I lived together. This was her first episode. This was your first episode.
Yeah.
Mission.
Yeah. Coming from a house of about 80 to 3. It's kind of a funny. Even our time in Washington, D.C., on average,
yeah.
about 30 sisters in the house. But then we go to Italy for about a year where we have our international house of formation. So sisters
yeah.
from all over the world come. So that's also kind of a funny moment of trying to figure out a common language.
Yeah.
Kind of like perpetual Pentecost in a sense. Everybody's speaking their own language. Somehow you understand each other.
Yeah.
Ends up being sign language. Kind of. A lot of gestures
yeah.
That happen there, but yeah.
That's it. And then by God's grace, mm-hmm. you request to make final profession after that 7 to 9 year period.
Okay.
So,
that's awesome. So, mm-hmm. in seminary for us, we had a difference between external and internal forum. Is there a similar thing like that? Or
yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly where, but I think in the formation of seminarians and religious sisters, the
mm-hmm.
church asks us to respect
yeah.
internal and external form. So Father's referring to, in dialogue with our superiors, one thing are the intimacies of our conscience or
right.
internal form, and another thing are the community elements of daily life, such as, which could be
right.
anything from studies to health to responsibilities in the community
yeah.
to human formation, vices or
oh, yeah.
bad habits that I have that I need to
oh,
work
yeah.
on. So we regularly speak about
correct.
These things with
mm-hmm.
our superiors,
yeah.
Kind of welcoming in their wisdom and welcoming the presence of Christ in them to speak to us,
mm-hmm.
to help us in our walk of holiness to grow and to overcome those difficulties with their support.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, we definitely have that distinction between
okay.
internal and external forum, and and also the freedom at the same time. I'm also very free that if I want to share something
right.
of my conscience with my superior, I'm free to do so,
mm-hmm.
knowing that they're also kind of held under, they're held under a certain secrecy not
mm.
to share that.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
an intimacy and a trust there
right.
that what we speak about is between the two of us. So I'm very grateful for
vulnerability.
That.
Yes.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, that.
Vulnerability.
Huge part of growth.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you tell us more about the charisms of your particular religious order?
Sure.
Yeah.
So our order, first of all, I should explain a little bit. The name of our sisters are the Sisters Servants of the Lord and the Virgin of Matara, which I'll explain in a little bit. And we are the female branch of a larger religious family known as the Religious Family of the Incarnate Word. So our founder, Father Carlos Miguel Buela, was a diocesan priest in Argentina. And in the 80s, he received a charism, and an inspirational grace to found first an order of missionary priests. That would be dedicated to really front lines of the church to provide the sacraments to the faithful. I think he began to experience that need for, there's just such a deep need to have more priests in the church to administer God's mercy. And so he was inspired to found a congregation of priests. And then soon, very soon after that, that was in 1984, in 1988, there were 4 years of young women approaching him saying, we have been formed by your fathers, there are spiritual directors, we want to share in this charism and live an experience of female religious life in this charism. And so Father prayed about that and decided to found the sisters in 1988. So from the beginning, we were conceived as a religious family of missionary priests and sisters born under the pontificate of John Paul II. That's really important to our understanding our religious family because he is cited over 1,000 times in our constitutions and in our law, our documents. So, you know that JP2 was really big into the evangelization of culture, term coined by actually Paul VI, but which he really brought to the forefront of church teaching and apostolic awareness. And our particular way of evangelizing culture is by extending the incarnation. So our religious family, the religious family of the incarnate word, is really rooted in the spirituality of God becoming man and what that means concretely in the church. So that means that God became man because he wanted to make every human being a new incarnation, right? He wanted to unite every single human person to himself, right, in this intimate communion of love. And so as missionaries, we want to allow that to take place in the soul of every person we encounter. That means by removing obstacles of sin, helping them to get over those obstacles that are keeping God from working in their lives. Mm-hmm. And then accompanying them through the sacraments, through the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, through our oratories with children, through our parish activity, through works of mercy, accompanying them and allowing them to become like another incarnate word to really reach that fullness of humanity. That's a lot. Sorry.
I love it. Okay. I love it. My favorite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the word became flesh. Mm-hmm. I love Christmas homilies because I'm always like, the word became flesh. What does that even mean? But that was a beautiful explanation of like, the incarnate individuality that we can have now with the Son of God made flesh. Like, that's just, it's just beautiful.
Our constitution. We quote St. Elizabeth of the Trinity a lot in our constitutions and in our vow formula. She has this beautiful quote where she says, I want to be another humanity of Christ. I want to be another humanity of Christ. And if you think about that a little bit, it kind of helps us to understand how God desires us to become a new incarnation. Like, just as Jesus's humanity was perfect and perfectly obedient to the divinity, right, in his will, in his, in his mind, that's what the Holy Spirit's trying to do in us, right? He's trying to unite our mind with the mind of Christ, our will with the will of Christ, and in that way we become another humanity of his. Right. So that's that's really the root of us. If you really want to understand our religious family and our religious community,
so you're trying to convince humans to be human.
Really human, man.
It's so difficult.
It is.
I love saying that in the confessional. So you're human. Yeah, cut yourself some slack. You're human.
But they're like, I need to be perfect.
And not without your heavenly Father.
Right, now without Jesus, it's not even worth it. Right?
Amen.
If I have not love, I don't have anything. So,
I think that part's beautiful, talking about, like, you know, how the incarnation is real, right? It takes on more of the individual level of the relationship with God, right? So what makes both of your mother and sister attracted to this particular order in the first place?
For me, so where I grew up, there wasn't religious sisters.
Okay.
So this, like, we had one sister that would come once a year and give a presentation for donating for the Rice Bowl.
The famous Rice Bowl.
Everyone knows about
it. And
the
like, as you got older, you're like, wait a second, I think she's showing the same pictures every year. Yeah. Like, you know, so there's always this kind of like, yeah, like you're like, well, like what is, like, you, but you know, you never really understood, like, yeah. What is this religious life aspect?
Yeah. Yeah. Going from the Rice Bowls.
Yeah. like, but my mom always tells the story of how I was very focused on getting the Rice Bowl back to the school the next day, because in my mind, if I got that box back the next day, a kid in Africa was going to have a bowl of rice that night. And so it was like all of my aunts had it, like everybody had to bring all of their coins over that night, because like otherwise I don't know what I was doing. Like, my mom was like every single year, like, all right, they sent the Rice Bowl home, come on over, everybody bring your cash. And so my mom's like, I think that's where your missionary zeal actually started, which I like kind of, you know, like it's one of those, the Rice Bowl goes back to the Rice Bowl.
That's awesome.
So there's that aspect. My father was diagnosed with brain cancer when I was 2 years old, and my mom was pregnant with my brother and was given a couple of months to live, and by God's grace lived 9.5 years. He, according to the medical standpoint, wasn't supposed to meet his son, which my mom was like 3 months until she was due. And towards the end of he always just had the cancer, but everything was kind of like stable. It was normal. Dad was half blind. He had a feeding tube, even though he was a chef, graduated top of his class from the culinary. The tumor, he lost his swallow. So there's like all these things that was just normal, like dad's sick. But then he started getting a little bit worse and was in the hospital for a month, and then our home for a month. And then somebody told us about a place called Rosary Hill Home, which is run by the Dominican Sisters of Hawthorne. But it was a very difficult decision for my mom, because she kind of felt like she was abandoning her husband by bringing him there. Yeah. And because his consciousness wasn't so there, it was hard to know if he understood this. But so we ended up bringing him there. My mom tells the story of, we were leaving one day, and there was a sister, DePaul, who hands-on cared for my dad. And I refused to go with my mom the day they were bringing my dad there. I was like, no, I got this really important test I got to take. but I was just like, I don't want to embrace this moment. Also, my mom, when she arrived there, was like, how do I leave my husband here? And the sister said to her, you've cared for your husband for these 9 years. Now you're going to allow for me to care for my spouse, to care for my husband, because each person in our care is Jesus Christ. And I remember my mom telling me that story, and it's still being like very foreign, because like to an 11-year-old, that's like a very different like concept to understand. And then one day my mom and I were leaving, and she said, I looked up at her and said, Mom, I no longer want to be a professional basketball player. Because, you know, at 11 years old, that's what I was doing. And my mom was like, thanks be to God, I'm not going to have to break it to her. Like, honey, you're good at CYO, but, like, WNBA, it's not going to happen. She said, I think that's the reason why I remember this story the most. But then I continue to say, I want to do what they do, the sisters, and help people. And I have no recollection of that. My mom told me that story, actually, when I was entering. And so I think that, and St. John Paul II speaks of that a lot, of the vocation is instilled a lot of times when in a child, right, after the First Communion, or when you're younger. And so I think for sure it was instilled in that moment. And then a couple of years later, I had a friend who, she was working as our youth minister at our parish, and I didn't really know, but she was at that time discerning vocation to religious life. And so little did I know, I was actually watching her go through the discernment process. Like, oh, she just went and spent a weekend with sisters. And then she said, yeah, I'm actually going to enter. And she entered with our religious family, our sisters. And I had gone to her investiture when she received the habit and her religious name. I went for her first vows, and I went to various events. And so I started to be a little bit more exposed to sisters. Also, our priest at that time was bringing in other sisters to just expose us to religious life, both for men and women. And so I had gone on World Youth Day Madrid with our religious family and had a month of prayer, no distractions, very little cell phone service, you know, so like the screen time was eliminated. And at that time I had just graduated high school and was going to be starting college 2 weeks after I returned. And really was just like hitting me like, okay, you're going to go to school to study social work because you want to help people and help care for people and show them that to fill that void in your life, like to put Christ in is the best way. But yet at the same time, I'm like, you know, but I'm going to just go to school and do this for a couple of years and get a degree. So I was left with this, like, why are you making me wait? Like Jesus asking me, why are you making me wait that I'm calling you now? And so I began the discernment process and looking at the different orders that I knew at that point. And there was definitely some like denial at first that I was like, definitely not the servants of the Lord. Like of all the orders, definitely not them.
Anyone
but like there was definitely this like acknowledgement of yes, but I was like, let me talk to some other people first. And so in discerning, and one day I went on to our website, our sister's website, and they had just posted like 2 hours before they were going to host their first Come and See weekend. And I was like, I think Jesus wants me to go. Because the fact like, I had,
we've all had that feeling.
And when I went on the retreat and just spending time with the sisters and getting to know about the congregation, I, in adoration, just very like strongly felt this like, welcome home, you know, like just in that sense. And the fact that it's, you know, with the evangelization of the cultures, it's not as though like we're just teachers or just working in parishes or different, like we have various types of ministry that we do. And also the family aspect to me was also something that drew me close, because with my father dying when I was at a young age, my family, my mom, brother, and I are very close. And so thinking of some orders who you don't see your family for 10 years. I was like, that's not what God's, that's not the sacrifice God's calling me to. He definitely calls others to that.
For sure.
And so just as I continued to learn more and more, it became clear and I asked to enter from that. But it's probably more than.
But you know, we've lived together 4.5 years. I never get tired of hearing it. It's so good every time. I'm like, oh, yes.
That's how grace works in our lives.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
It's never boring.
Amen. I was just struck by that, you know, how like we often think of like, especially with, you know, encouraging vocations, right? Like I have to say those golden words, but it's so beautiful of how that sister just embrace her charisms of religious order, right? And show that love, and that's powerful. That's a lot. I was just thinking, if I was 11, try and grasp, like, how does that work for spousal imagery, right? Like, what does it even mean?
And I think what it was the fact that I saw Sister DePaul doing it. I didn't know what to be a spouse of Christ meant. I didn't know that she looked at my father and saw Jesus Christ and saw that she was caring for her husband. I just saw the love that she gave, and even we would have family friends come to, my father was only there for a little over a month, and people would come to see, and my mom said, even when they dropped him off, they said, okay, we're going to go take him to the back, and like, just like, helped care for his skin, like, well manicured him, and it was like, he was so sick and he was so close to death, but he never looked so good, you know? And even like one of our friends came and leans over to my mom and is like, are they giving him Botox? Cause his skin looks great. But it was just like, they like, and sometimes you see that like difference in nursing homes. It's like, we give you like your food, your medicine, the minimal, but like to these sisters, it was like they, and it says it in their charism that we prepare them to exit this life and enter into the next, right? And so with the spiritual needs and even just the, like, kind of strange comfort knowing that there's a sister, a spouse of Christ, right next to my father in his final moments. And at the time when he passed, he was surrounded by sisters, you know, and like the mystery of that, that then later on I would be called to a religious sister, like, you know, and there was a moment where we were accompanying a parishioner who passed away, who his daughter is a sister, and she wasn't able to be there. And so it was at that moment that I kind of made this connection of like, you know, there's Dominican sisters there by my father's side in his final moments, and this other sister, she's a Dominican also. And so it was like, in a sense, I kind of felt like, you know, you get to pay back. Like, God's using various people's vocations in various ways. And so it wasn't that I think ever a sister, like, explained to me what to be with their words, but simply by their actions and the love and care that they gave to us. In that short time, again, a month and a half, he was there. Yeah, so, and that's, like, also the thing, I mean, St. Francis of Assisi says that, like, you know, don't just go somewhere to preach, like, preach while you're going there, you know, along the ways, like, let all of our actions, because actions speak louder than words a lot of times, you know, and so the way that it's not just about what we teach in the catechism classroom, but just the love that we share. That everybody can do that, you know, showing Christ in all of our actions.
I had something.
And it's the time.
There it goes.
Holy
Ghost. There you go. That's all right. I'll come right
to it. I'll come right.
Did you have a similar experience to Mother Faith, being called as witness by a religious order?
Some similarities.
We both dropped out of college after our sophomore.
Every vocation is so unique.
Yeah,
I feel kind of bad when you ask the two of us to speak, because I'm like, we're both, we both didn't finish college. Like, kind of a lot of similarities.
Hey, I wouldn't finish it either, other than it was required. My dad still to this day goes, the kid that never wanted to go to college is the first one to get his master's. We just crack up about that as a family, because I don't like school at all. So.
That's not ours.
Yeah. Ironic. So. It's hilarious.
I grew up in Massachusetts, which I mean, Western Mass, so it wasn't like a big city, but definitely I would say that the New England area and the East Coast in general, faith wasn't a major part of culture or society, even though my family's Catholic and I grew up Catholic, attending Mass every Sunday, and I just never had witnessed the truth of religious life really at all. My high school, I went to a Catholic high school, which was run by sisters who I loved and respected very, very much as my teachers. But I don't think I really understood their life or their vocation. We called them sister, but they didn't wear the habit, and there weren't so many external signs that pointed me to the vows that they professed or the meaning of those vows, you know. Looking back now as a sister, I received so many good examples from remembering them and all the good that I received from them. And they definitely prayed for me during my high school years. I mean, when I finally went back, once I discovered my vocation, I had a very short period at home. I was home for 2 weeks from the time that I discovered my vocation to entering religious life. I made sure to visit my high school teacher, and she was like, "Oh, I knew you had a vocation the whole time." I'm like, "What?" Nobody talked about vocations in high school, and I mean, I didn't even know it was a possibility until college. So, however, really the thread I see in my vocation is my relationship with Christ in the Eucharist, because that was where, and my relationship with our Blessed Mother, who really both have been so present to me my entire life, like from my childhood. I remember just occasions in high school where we had opportunities to visit the Blessed Sacrament and not thinking much of it, but just always being like, yeah, sure, I'll go. You can go visit the Blessed Sacrament, sure. Yeah, study hall, Mrs. Study Hall, yeah, I'll go visit the Blessed Sacrament. by God's providence, I ended up at the Catholic University of America after 4 years of high school. And that really by God's providence, because I had been rejected at all of my top selection colleges. So I was just like reject letter after reject letter after reject letter. I'm like, And then finally, my guidance counselor said, well, why don't you apply to CUA? I said, fine. I thought I was done with Catholic school. But lo and behold, I was accepted and got a scholarship, and so I was able to attend there. And that is where I met our sisters for the first time. Mm. So as I said before, our order is relatively young. We were born in 1988 and came to the States in, I think, 94. And founded our houses of formation in the year 2000 in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So the timeline was just really providential because I began college in D.C. in 2001 when I was 17. And so I would see at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, I would go to daily mass occasionally, and I would see these blue and gray sisters at the daily mass, and I would just think, that is such an ugly habit. No, literally, is that terrible?
No, that's funny.
I know.
I love the order that you're like, nah, whatever.
I was like, gosh, the Carmelites just really outdo them in style. Like,
Brown is so much
better. I love how that wouldn't even cross my mind.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, as a man, I'm like, they're wearing whatever.
Who
like,
cares?
Another sister.
I know. Yeah, but I was just like, oh, they don't even have a cape. I wasn't thinking about religious life at all at the time. I was just like, yay. During those 2 years of college, I was made some really good friends who introduced me to Eucharistic adoration, which I had never done before up in Massachusetts during the 90s. There was no Eucharistic adoration, I'm sure, in parts of Minnesota as well. That could be the case.
Oh, yeah.
So weekly adoration, and then daily mass, and then monthly confession. And as my soul just began to be opened up to God's grace, I would just received, I mean, the Lord really prepared me for my vocation. And I think there's something so consoling to that, to know that no matter where you are in your journey, the Lord is preparing you for exactly what he wants. And so to be faithful to whatever he's presenting to your conscience in that moment. For me, it was becoming part of a women's study on theology of the body, and then really growing close to those women through our weekly meetings and prayer and retreats together. The Lord inspired me to do a dating fast, which I had no idea. That wasn't called a dating fast at the time.
Focus made that popular.
Yeah. 2002, I had no idea. I was just like, I think I'm not supposed to date right now. And so the Lord just really gave me like a spiritual gift of chastity, like a desire for chastity, while at the same time introducing me more intimately to his presence in the Eucharist. So it was kind of like, whoa, I love Jesus and the Blessed Sacrament a lot, like in a very real way, more than I've loved most of the men I've dated. it's like you know, in high school, like,
oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
right,
like,
yeah.
Like it's quotes, a true, for sure. A true yeah. love. then I visited. I was open to religious life, and so I thought, okay, Lord, I'm open to discerning. So why don't I visit an order? Went to that college bulletin board with all of the flyers and pamphlets. Looked at all of them. Was kind of like, anything that attracts me. Oh, this other order. Oh, I liked some of the things on there. Okay. Kind of strange. They took a vow of silence, and at the time I was feeling very called to silence. Which is a strange thing. I don't think many college students experience that, but I just felt a need for silence in my life, deeper silence. And so I called up their vocations director, very kind of naive and simple. I guess that was also a gift from the Lord. I wasn't afraid, and I think that's a gift, because I've met many young women who struggle with fear during their process of discernment. Spent a week with them. My mom came to pick me up after the week. I loved my time there, but it definitely was not my vocation at that moment. So she picked me up, and she had like a thing of Girl Scout cookies right next to the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And all she said, we were leaving, she's like, so how did it go? And I'm like, I don't have a vocation, and just started shouting down. like just eating like as much chocolate as I could. So I thought, okay, I gave the Lord a chance, and I don't have a vocation or just life. Fast forward a little bit. I don't know how much to share with you guys. ended up dating my best friend in college after that experience, because I felt very freed, as if the Lord wasn't calling me to be a sister. And so one of my very, very good friends, who had been so respectful to me throughout our entire friendship, I was telling him about my discernment, and he was like, so you're not discerning religious life? I'm like, well, I'm open to it, but I don't think it's what the Lord's calling me to right now. And so we began kind of dating, like in a very, beautiful. It was like the best relationship I've ever had in my entire life. Nice. Yeah, like so respectful and so, just really respectful and.
That was speaking from my experience.
Don't want to gaslight you.
However, the Lord was still calling me to religious life during that time, and so that. Became very clear to me when we were attending one of our friends' weddings together, and one of my best friends was about to enter religious life right after this wedding, and we were all hanging out and talking about it, and just my heart was so drawn toward every word that she said, and that was very strange because I was very happy in my relationship. I was so happy in our relationship, and we seemed to be walking together in that relationship, and yet I felt the Lord pulling my heart in another direction, which to me made no sense. And I'm like, Lord, I'm perfectly content, and you've given me such a wonderful man. Like, how could there be something more? Right. How could I not be content with this?
Right.
And so through some very difficult conversations, we realized we needed to take a break from dating, at which point I was called to make a spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius of Loyola. And I wanted to make sure to mention this on the podcast for any women who have never heard of the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius or attended one. The spiritual exercises were written by St. Ignatius in the late 1500s. It's a four-week, the original retreat is a four-week silent retreat that brings you to a greater knowledge of yourself, an intimate knowledge of the Lord, and prepares you to answer the question honestly, what have I done for Christ? What am I doing for Christ? And what will I do for Christ? And it allows you to ask that question really embraced by the Father's love, so that you feel like you can really answer it with your whole heart. And so providentially in that moment, for the first time, I was invited to attend a retreat, an Ignatian retreat, not the 30-day.
We've done the 30 days.
Yeah, we did too. Yeah,
you guys did it as part of your formation,
right? It's part of our formation. Yeah. It
somehow became part of ours.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyways, I was a willing participant.
Not at all.
It's all
super
good.
Open.
You made it
super open.
You made it through.
I made it. We had some brothers that were like, let's do that again. And I'm like,
nope.
Not in 30
like,
years.
Not ready. No. Yeah.
Anyways. It was great.
It can be. I mean, for me, it was definitely, it was a shortened version. So for the laity, our religious family offers kind of like an essential compact form of 4 to 5 days, up to 8 days, depending on the retreat. That kind of just presents you with each of the weeks in one day, and you go through a series of meditations. Either way, the Lord gave me what I call like the gift of perfect indifference. Spit everywhere, sorry. So I gave it a perfect indifference, and I went into that retreat very open to the Lord's will. And it was there in that silence and in that questioning that he just made it very clear to me, I have made you for myself, and I am your vocation. So, the retreat master said, okay, well, discern that. Discern the congregations you know. Like, just find out what else the Lord has in store for you. So I was very open. I knew I had met our congregation in college. I knew that other congregation I visited in high school. And I had been secretly kind of thinking about becoming a Third Order Carmelite. Maybe I was like, maybe I can become a lay Carmelite. I don't know. But the the missionary element of our religious family really called me. Mm-hmm. Just that openness to going wherever the Lord calls you. Mm. I was made for that. And so with a lot of peace, the Lord was super respectful of that moment of discernment. There was absolutely no pressure. I didn't experience strong desolation or consolation, which I had previously during my college years. Mm. It was just a moment of perfect peace. And as if he said, you're free. Like, I'm calling you now. You have nothing to lose. Follow me, but you're completely free. Mm. And so I gave him, by his grace, a wholehearted yes. And I said, well, Lord, if this isn't your will for me, then just start closing doors. And I will take that as a no. But until you close doors, I'm going. Mm-hmm. And we're moving forward. Mm-hmm. And now it's been 19 years. and no doors.
And no doors.
Keep opening. Deeper and deeper. So.
There's always the, every once in a while I feel the Jeremiah, from the book of Jeremiah, right? Lord, you duped me and I let myself be duped.
Be duped.
You didn't close any doors, and I'm thankful because it's great living out this vocation, but I let myself be duped. It's okay. You're loved. Yeah.